Welcome to the DMSG Healthcare Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Hadley, founder and CEO of the Denver Medical Study Group. Based in Colorado, we are going into our 15th year with over 1,350 members in 29 states. Our educational events include DMSG webinars, healthcare podcasts, and in-person meetings. I'm excited today to visit with Todd Welter, Chairman and CEO of Welter Healthcare Partners. Todd, thank you for joining me today. Would you tell our listeners a little about yourself and your background?
Sure. Well, first of all, thank you so much for inviting me. This is really a treat. So I've been in this market doing this stuff for about 30 years. We're just coming up on that anniversary. And my particular expertise is payer relationships with for providers and hospitals and just trying to help, that relationship and make it work, because we all want to make sure that patients are seen and providers are available and all of those sorts of things. So we feel like it's a relationship, and it has to be like any relationship. It has to be governed, and it has to be monitored and all of those sorts of things. So we also do revenue cycle. We have kind of a niche in the revenue cycle business. We do a lot of coding and compliance work, and we do a tremendous amount of credentialing, both enrollment and CVO work, all over the country. Thousands and thousands and thousands of providers we do it for. Wow. I also teach, by the way, Chris, I don't know if you know this or not. I teach economics in the master's program at the University of Denver.
Oh, well, good for you. Good for you. They are one of our sponsors, and we're proud to work with them on their Master's in Healthcare Administration program, along with DU and Metro State.
Yep, I'm in that program. Yeah, I've been there for, over a decade.
Oh, wow. Well, I understand Jeff Helton's in charge of their program there now.
Yeah, that is a great program. Great people, great students.
Yeah, we've had the pleasure of working with a couple of them as student interns for the Denver Medical Study Group. You know, you mentioned, Todd, about payer relations, and this was a question that I was wondering about. Who do you work with? You mentioned providers and hospitals, so you work with both ends of the parama.
Absolutely. So kind of every angle, if you will. So our credentialing department works hand in glove with payers, because the payers have to credential their network. Hospitals, of course, have to credential the providers that work in the hospital. So we do that. We help assist with that as well. And then providers themselves have to have that relationship, both in credentialing and be properly contracted. So yeah, we kind of work every angle of this stuff.
Well, you do. You have a good exposure and understanding of what's going on overall in the healthcare industry.
Well, I don't know if anybody does, but we try.
There were a couple of areas that we wanted to talk about today at your suggestion, and one was payer denying coverage. Specifically, Cigna has been one that's been in the news quite a bit lately. What's this all about, Todd?
Well, I saw that article, and yes, Cigna is, pointed out, but frankly, this happens everywhere. It's not just Cigna. They just happen to be the subject of the article. So the healthcare system is incredibly complex, and from a kind of a coder's point of view, the coding systems have, over the last 10 years, have multiplied. There are 19 times more procedures in the coding system than there were 10 years ago. There are 5 times more diagnosis codes. 5 times. I mean, the book of, we used to have books, right? We had a book that was maybe 3 inches thick of diagnostic codes in little tiny print. And now there's 5 times more. So I think it's Cigna and others are trying to do their best to match up what is done and why it's done and see if it matches. So for example, really simple example would be you can't do procedures on men that are procedures for women. I mean, you don't do hysterectomies on men, you know. And there's lots of those sort of that's just super duper simple, but there's lots of those combinations that just simply don't work. And I believe it's not so much malice. They don't have time to pick out individual, you know, specialties or even physicians or hospitals or whatever and say, we don't want to pay their claims. That's not what this is. This is about a very, very complex system trying to save money where they can, trying to do their best on behalf of their customers, which is either in the Medicare world, you know, the Medicare system maybe, or in the patients, but also in the commercial world, the payers, customers, Cigna's especially, are employers. So my company, you know, I have 35 or 40 employees and we're a customer of Cigna. And so Cigna is trying to do their best, and they may not get it right all the time, but to, you know, control costs. And I believe that that's what that is. Now, can errors happen? Absolutely. And they need to be pointed out and they need to be fixed. So all of us as consumers of healthcare, whether we're an employer who pays for healthcare for their employees or us as individuals that have services done, need to examine our, you know, explanation of benefits and make sure that, you know, what we had done or need to have done or whatever is being paid properly. And if it's not, it needs to be pointed out and they need to fix it.
You know, you have talked about the change from ICD-9 to ICD-10. How has that made this phenomenon worse?
Just size. It is unbelievable how more specific everything is. So they're really, I mean, it's a good thing. We're actually behind in the United States. The ICD-10 jump happened in the rest of the world, you know, years and years before us. So we're behind the times a little bit. We're just now catching up into the world of, you know, very precise coding. So it's not about, you know, let's say I go in to get a procedure done. I just had some lab work done. So it's not about, you know, acute problem anymore. It's also about the other thing. So it's more a holistic way of coding. It's a good thing. It's just very complicated and it's very, very specific. So, you know, I'll just use myself as an example. They want to know, do I smoke? I don't smoke, but you know, they want to know that, you know, well, I'm not in there for anything that has anything to do with smoking, but it could be over time. So they would want to know, you know, weight and all of those things that could over time end up being an issue, may not be acute today, but over time it builds up. And increasingly health plans, providers, ACOs, accountable care organizations are in the business of, let's get ahead of things before it becomes an ER visit, before it becomes an admission into the hospital system. All of those, that's what ICD-10 brings us to a place where we can do that.
Wow. Is there anything that we as consumers can do to help move this along?
Absolutely. So pay attention. It's probably my best advice is we can't be passive observers in this system. We need to be active as consumers of healthcare. We need to ask questions. We need to demand answers, both from providers and from our health plans. You know, what is covered? What is not covered? How does that all work? I think even to the point of, and it's difficult as a regular consumer of healthcare, is who makes decisions for my, for example, pharmacy. So again, just as an example, we have Cigna and we got a notice that Cigna moved away. We used to use a local pharmacist and we were sort of pushed into, you know, gently, but moved into, you know, they'd really rather us use in my case, because of where I live, I guess, and is Walgreens. So why? I mean, are they getting a deal from Walgreens? You know, I think we should. And then Cigna has its own pharmacy, so I don't want to pick on Cigna because they're all the same. But you know, even questions about that. Where does this come from? Why has it happened this way? And anytime we have a, more specifically, anytime we have anything done, any kind of service, we really ought to look at those bills. Did this happen? And, you know, did it happen on this day? Did it happen with this provider? There remains an awful lot of fraud in the healthcare system. So we need to watch out for that and be active consumers rather than passive consumers of healthcare.
Good point. Yeah. You were talking about the ICD-10 is a good thing. Sounds like it may tie in with our next topic, value-based care.
Absolutely.
It does it? Okay. And that seems to be all the rage now. Now that we've gotten through COVID pandemic, at least from a provider point of view, what does it mean?
So great question. And it is all the rage. And I will say that us who live here in the Denver metropolitan area, the Front Range of Colorado, we're really behind. A lot of other communities around the country are ahead of us in this, where value-based care puts providers at risk. And it's a good thing. So I believe, because I'm a doctor guy, I love doctors, and just the way they think and the way they operate and all that, that putting providers at risk for the value that comes out of healthcare is a good thing. It is especially used and needed in the Medicare world. So we're moving to a place where 50% and more of the Medicare market is moving on to Medicare Advantage or some version of Medicare Advantage. That's, you know, that's a good thing. Their benefits can be more. There can be more. They add additional benefits. You know, it's October right now. We're about to see all of these commercials that, you know, this is, we're about to enter into open enrollment. And so we're going to get besieged by commercials, and the health plans kind of try to outdo each other. So basically, in a value-based market, they want to drive value, which means lower overall cost. Okay, overall cost. So unleashing a lot of tools, including diagnostic codes. And yes, ICD-10 has unlocked the ability to do this because of the granularity and being able to bring more tools. There are companies called aggregators, and we kind of deal with these guys all the time. They're great. And they bring a lot of electronic tools. They bring a lot of research. They bring a lot of best practices to both physician providers and also hospital systems. And when I say physician providers, I'm including, mid-level providers or APPs, they're called these days, in that group. So bringing a lot of tools to them to make sure that, you know, if I'm going to go to the doctor, again, they don't want to just look at what's an acute problem, but also what is or could be a chronic condition. So they want to make sure that patients are getting the best quality of care, but also, looking into the future of care, not just what is happening today. So that's what we call quality. And that also brings, you know, and maybe somewhat in theory, but increasingly proving this mathematically, that we can actually give better care at a lower price, at a lower overall price. And when I say overall price, I mean, it's not the amount that they pay the doctor, right? Actually increase that, right? You could increase that number and have an overall lower cost, because maybe, you know, maybe I already had it. I have an MRI in my file. I don't need another one. Keep me out of the emergency room. right? Get in front of things so I don't feel like I have to go to the emergency room. Provide additional. So my wife, for example, had surgery, you know, it was a few years ago. She's fine and everything went great. But when she went to an ambulatory surgical center, which is cheaper. Okay. That's part of this. And then discharged basically to me. And, you know, and I kind of feel like I know a few things about healthcare, right? I've been doing this for 30 years. But when I got her home, I was like, oh my God, you know, and, you know, some people may end up in an emergency room, but, you know, maybe a couple of days of home health, having a nurse come by, those are the things that you might be spending a couple of extra dollars, but you're saving thousands and thousands of dollars. Those are the things that value-based care can bring to the table, especially in a Medicare population. Because, right, as we get older, you know, things happen.
Sure.
And the best place to see somebody is at home, you know, if it's appropriate. So it's kind of exciting that there's some new things happening. And I'm a big advocate of putting providers at risk for these dollars. And if they save money, they can share in that savings.
You know, you've talked about home. There's a lot of conversation going on, hospitals at home, different organizations. Dispatch Health does a lot of work at home in four or five different states, but based out of Colorado. And
sure.
It sounds like value-based care is going to encourage more home care. Is that right?
Absolutely. Hospitals. God love them. I love the hospitals. Work with the hospital folks all the time. Really appreciate their expertise and dedication. But hospitals are expensive. You know, emergency rooms are unbelievably expensive. I went to the emergency room, again, years and years and years ago. Everything's fine. But, you know, you clutch your chest in an emergency room, boom. You know, sirens go off. Everybody goes crazy. And they go, you know, they start spending money real fast. God love them. Saving people's lives. And if you need to go to the hospital, you should. But you don't always need to go to the hospital. And you may not need to stay in the hospital, you know, day after day after day after day, when that same care can be done at home. We have a client, and actually a good friend of mine, who does a lot of home-based care. And, you know, he can help a patient and family, which is even more important, to feel comfortable that they're getting good quality care at their home. They may need to have a test or two. They may need an IV. They may need whatever. I'm not a healthcare provider, so I can't give exact examples. But they may need even physical therapy and, you know, some of the other therapies. They may need those things. But what's the difference between being at your own house or being in a hospital? And frankly, hospitals are filled with sick people. Why would I want to hang out with them?
Yeah, as you were saying that, it reminded me that being at home is a much more comfortable environment, and I think would encourage healing and yep. that whole process. So,
yeah,
I know
they need support. It's not like, you know, my sister can come by and look after me. She doesn't know what to do, or my wife even, you know, but they just need some support, and so it brings it great value. It's more comfortable, but it has to be the right environment. So my friend who does home care, he says often he'll be in a place where, you know, it just the way it's maybe an older home that is not set up properly. And, you know, like, you know, being able to take a shower or use the bathroom or whatever, you know, they need to add a few things or, you know, put some grab bars in or whatever. So we certainly want everyone to be safe.
You bet. Well, you know, it's a pleasure to get to visit with you today. Is there anything else that you'd like to share with our listeners about today's discussion?
I am incredibly optimistic about healthcare. I think we all, especially those of us that are in the healthcare business, kind of can get sort of beat up and beat down and you know, but I'm incredibly optimistic. I think we're really heading in a very exciting direction. I think that, you know, in my own career, I mean, I used, you know, I've done managed care contracting on behalf of providers for years and years. And it used to be that we would, you know, not literally, but, you know, we'd throw rocks at each other, right, to get a deal done. And we just don't do that anymore. It's a collaborative process. It is, you know, let's do what's right. Let's think about this in a big picture way, more holistically. I'm encouraged that that's happening. I'll tell you just more personally, I'm thrilled to death. I get to work with my son. So, you know, the University of Missouri in Columbia, he went there for 4 years and has come back. And, you know, I tried to get him to get a real job, but he's working here. He's right next door to me in my office. So I'm thrilled to be able to work with him and think the future is in good hands.
Well, we thank you so much for your time and wish you the very best in all that you do, Todd.
Thank you.
You have a great day.
I'm thrilled to be here. Thanks so much for the invitation.
You bet.